Defender's Office. I'm representing Mr. Edwards. My registration number is 34384. I guess the easiest way to approach this is to state where I think the Attorney General and I agree and where I think we part ways. I think we can all agree that in a self-defense case, the defendant can get up there, claim self-defense, like happened in this case, and can talk about the character of the alleged victim. Yes, he was a violent guy. He had a reputation in the prison community as being a bad guy. Furthermore, if the defendant knows, he can also get into specific violent acts in the defendant's past that he was aware of that go to his reasonableness in employing self-defense. That's exactly what happened here. The prosecutor can then, in turn, elicit reputation or opinion evidence about the defendant's character in the relevant community for violence, which is exactly what happened here. Now, the only way that the prosecutor can then go further and get into specific acts of the defendant in his past is if he denies having a propensity for violence or a reputation in the community. That's not what happened here. Mr. Edwards, after he testified that the victim had a violent criminal history, he knew, he was aware of certain instances in the victim's past because the victim and he were friends at one point. He knew of the victim's prior acts of violence. He saw a file that said that a victim had committed murder at one point and some other violent acts. He knew of the victim's reputation as being a violent guy. Mr. Edwards was then asked, well, by the prosecutor, well, you have a reputation for violence too, isn't that right? You're a fighter. He agreed, yes, I have a reputation for violence. Where we part ways is that the case law, the rules do not provide for the prosecution then getting into specific acts of violence, which they did, that are in Mr. Edwards' past. And I think that's where we fundamentally disagree. I think we all agree that asking him about his reputation in the community was fine. I think we all agree that if they wanted to put on evidence of his reputation in the community, that would be fine. But getting into specific acts is simply not permitted unless they have some other independent relevance, and then you would have to engage in a 404B type analysis.
Counsel, let me ask you this. Assuming that the court erred in allowing the testimony about the specific acts of violence, how is that substantially harmful to the defendant in this case?
Well, the case was all about self-defense, and the case had an element of heat of passion as well. I think in a case where the fundamental issue is, were you sufficiently provoked, that evidence, especially evidence of, you know, 15 different assaults in your past, is certainly going to weigh heavily on the jury's mind against you. We're not talking about one or two incidents that the prosecutor got into. If that were the case, then I would see your point. Error, probably not harmful enough to warrant reversal. However, this case is much different. The prosecutor started off by saying, sir, you have a long history of violence in DOC. Is that correct? Yes. And then she or he, I can't remember, went through each and every one of these, citing the place, the time, the exact date, in some cases the facts of what happened. And then after she got talking about the 10 assaults, she also said, well, you have 5 write-ups for fighting in DOC as well. I mean, I can't imagine this not prejudicing a jury, particularly in a case where self-defense is the issue. If this were a drug case, sure, not relevant. If this were theft, improper but not relevant, probably not harmful. But in a case where it comes down to whether my client acted in self-defense or not, eliciting all these specific and prejudicial instances of him assaulting other people in DOC and fighting in DOC has got to be harmful, has got to weigh into the jury's determination when they decide whether or not he legitimately acted in self-defense.
Mr. Huff, oh, no, go ahead.
Follow up on that. Wasn't there substantial evidence that Mr. Edwards did not act in self-defense?
I believe so.
Including a note that was found, that was written by Mr. Edwards to the victim stating that he was going to, or waiting to kill him?
Well, the note wasn't quite that clear, and Mr. Edwards actually testified, yes, he wrote the note. He was mad at one point, but then he threw the note away. He consulted with some other peers of his and decided that that wasn't the way to go about it. These are words that he actually testified to, and the jury very well could have believed that. I don't think there's any doubt that both of these men have a history of violence, and both of these guys certainly could have had the propensity to kill each other, which one of them did. I mean, if you believe Mr. Edwards, and that's up to the jury as to how much they believed, the alleged victim earlier in the day tried to stab him, and then when he came down to discuss it various issues with the alleged victim is the one that had the shank and came at him first. Mr. Edwards then wrestled it away and stabbed the alleged victim. Now, who knows how much of that the jury believes and didn't believe, but I do think that this was a very close case in that respect.
I'd like to ask you about the standard of review, since you and the prosecutor disagree on that.
I don't think we do, actually.
Okay, well, let me ask, because you're raising 404 B here?
Actually, it would be 404 A1.
A1.
Which is the record we made below.
Okay, is 404 A1 is what you argued in the trial court?
Yes.
So any other argument on appeal would be subject to a plain review standard?
Well, arguably so, but we said bad character, which is of course encompassed by 404B. Everybody knows that 404B is about bad character evidence and whether it can come in or not. We specifically cited 404, and the judge made a specific ruling on 404 A1, but I think this case can be decided on 404 A1 because it either comes in under 404 A1 or it doesn't. If it doesn't come in under 404 A1, then you would have to go to the next step, which is 404 B, to see if it has any other independent relevance. And you'd have to do the whole SPOTO analysis, which of course wasn't done here. Now, we never mentioned 404 B. That's true. We didn't have to because the judge resolved it at the first bar, which is 404 A1. Which either allows this to come in or it doesn't. We argued it doesn't allow it to come in. This isn't a tit-for-tat sort of analysis. We can get into priors of the victim that we knew about, but they can't just elicit my client's entire criminal history here. They can elicit his relevant opinions of his violent propensities in the community, his reputation, but they can't get into specific acts unless they do a 404B analysis and somehow show that those prior acts of the defendant could come in under that rule of evidence.
So you were not there, but someone objected contemporaneously as she was bringing in this garbage can of evidence.
Right.
And did the trial court give a reason for letting it in?
The trial courts, from what I recall, specifically said this is admissible pursuant to CRE 404 A1. So the trial court mistakenly believed that this was a tit-for-tat sort of situation. And we did, the Attorney General disagrees with us saying we didn't preserve this, but that's clearly not the case. We didn't object when they asked our client, you have a general reputation in the community for being a violent guy, right? That's proper. We didn't object. We objected on bad character evidence and CRE 404 when they started getting into the specific acts in his past. And we said, no, they can't get into that. They can only get into general reputation or opinion testimony as to his character. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal, if that's okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May I please the court? Paul Kaler, 19210. I always hate getting up on an oral argument and starting my notes say, start off with this, and then first I want to say this, and then first I want to say that. I have about 8 things I want to say first.
Talk about why it could be harmless error. Assume it's error. And why is it harmless?
Oh, it was, the defendant's story was he was able to force his way out of his jail cell at a time when he wasn't allowed out of his cell. The expert mechanical evidence was that was impossible to do based on the locking mechanism. He had to have used the blind spot the blind spot in the pod. There was a blind spot that the prisoners knew could not be seen from the pod observation point. When it was there, he'd cut the shank, the knife, out of his own cell, a piece of metal out of his own cell with his own fingernail clippers. He told multiple stories. They had bad blood. He'd been dissed. The defendant had been dissed by the victim for having him say that he was a welcher on his crummy little prison betting schemes. And I don't think it was a very close case at all.
He told multiple stories, but among the multiple stories, wasn't one of them that it was in self-defense, that the victim had attacked him earlier, that he was simply going down there to try to clarify what was going on, and he was surprised.
And I can't remember what the story was. The final story was, one story I think was that he just happened to have the shank with him. Another story was that he'd made the shank for somebody else in the pod, and he didn't know how it got into the victim's possession, and when they started their fisticuffs, as the defendant said.
Assuming for purposes of this discussion that it was error to have put in all this, these specific conduct, why isn't it for the jury to infer which of the multiple stories, whether or not it wanted to believe them or not?
I don't think it was, Your Honor. The evidence was the full evidence was set forth. And as far as the defendant stating here that we're arguing a tit-for-tat view of the evidence, I think that is clearly what the Advisory Committee for the Federal Rules of Evidence said. It said when evidence comes in under 404A2, which is permissible in a self-defense case, then under 404A1 was specifically designed to allow the prosecution to bring in similar or the same evidence, if it could, concerning the defendant. It levels the playing field. That's what it was done here. And as far as the means for getting that, 405A says character may be proved by reputation or opinion. And 405B, which is crucial here, says proof may also be made of specific instances of that person's conduct. So I think that the argument that we need to go with the 404B route is just not necessary in light of 404B. We don't need to go 404B route because of 405A. So 405B, sorry.
You're saying there was no error?
None at all, Your Honor.
Okay.
And it was completely set forth in the trial court when the defendant started bringing in his testimony about the victim. The prosecution got up and the trial court backed her up and said, if this evidence comes in under 404A1, it comes under one part of 404A. The evidence about the defendant comes in under the other part of 404A. And that's exactly what was done here. This is a complete mechanical, following the rules kind of case. And as far as any sort of claim that it couldn't refer to specific instances of conduct, I don't think that was raised down below. And also, if the court feels like it really wants to go the 404B route, of course, appellate courts can address 404B factors for the first time appeal. The Supreme Court's done it, this court's done it, and I think that would be wrong. This rule was devised to deal with this exact situation, to balance the playing field between the evidence for the defendant so he can explain why he acted reasonably in light of the situation, and balance aside for the prosecution where the victim is no longer around to explain what was going on.
So if we were to address the 404B on appeal, walk me through the four elements and tell me how you think it should come out.
No, well, just to show, to rebut the defendant's defense that he was the victim of the victim, that he was acting in self-defense, goes to his mental state, to rebut his defense. And so that's the permissible purpose. 403 has to be a basis of shocking the sensibilities of the public, horror, retribution, things like that. I think in a case like this, where we have both people that have been in prison a long time, remember Mr. Davis from way early in my career, that they were not both involved in multiple fights throughout 20 years of incarceration would be, if they were not involved in that, that would be surprising to say the least.
The independent some stress.
The impermissible inference is that a person has done bad things in bad ways in the past, and therefore, whatever the facts of the situation is, they did something bad here because they're a bad guy. Here, the evidence is narrowly addresses the key issue in this case, who attacked whom, and it was presented not by the prosecution in order to slam the defendant, but to balance the scales of the evidence to show, or at least provide evidence that both these inmates were bad people, and they were both fighters, and then the jury could determine, based on the other evidence, who started the fight, who acted in self-defense, who was the victim, who was the person properly charged with a crime. I don't have anything else to state. Does the court have any further questions? Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Huff?
Unlike the prosecution, we didn't get into every single act that Mr. Davis, the victim, had committed in his past because the rules don't provide for that. The rules only provide for acts that we were aware of, because acts that we weren't aware of don't go to our self-defense. We don't know if Mr. Davis was aware of these acts of my client going back 18 years. We have no clue. The point is, the rules don't allow for it anyway. And when Mr. Kaler cites CRE 405B, he left out some important facts. Yes, it does say specific instances of conduct. It says, in cases in which character or trait of character of a person is an essential element of a charge, claim, or defense, proof may also be made of specific instances of that person's conduct. They had none of that in their case. We had the essential element of self-defense, and that's what People v. Jones says, is that that's why it comes in. That's why we can get into specific incidents that we were aware of, because it goes directly to our claim of self-defense. I also want to say that if the court goes down the 404B route, I don't think any of this should have come in for any reason. It didn't involve the same victim. It was 18 or more years old in the past. Some of it was. There was no limiting instruction given. So even if this court found that it could have come in under 404B, the jury was given no discretion or guidance as to how to use it. And like I said, it's just fundamentally unfair, because we didn't get into Mr. Davis's complete criminal history. I'm sure it was as long as my client's. I don't know. But the point is, we only got into things which the rule allowed us to get into, which were things that my client knew about when going into the fight with Mr. Davis. And again, I want to stress, yes, clients hold a few different stories. I don't think anyone is surprised by that. This is prison. Everybody's going to have a different take on what occurred. The bottom line is, the jury very well could have found that he acted unreasonably by stabbing Mr. Davis the number of times that he did, but Mr. Davis was the initial aggressor. Without all this bad evidence that came in, these 10 prior assault conviction or assault instances in DOC, five instances of fighting, the jury very well could have seen this in a different light and found that client did act reasonably or that the prosecution failed to show that he did not act reasonably beyond a reasonable doubt. All I'm saying is if any one of us was on trial in a self-defense case and they dredged up all this crap from 18 years ago, I can't imagine we would be sitting here saying that, oh, this could be harmless. Of course it's not harmless. The jury is reasonable. They're lay people. They're going to take this stuff into consideration when they determine whether or not Klein acted reasonably. And it simply was improper to do. It was error and it was harmful. And there's really no way around that. If it had been one or two incidents, fine. Maybe we could let it go. But the prosecution went piece by piece over 18 years of client's history and painted this picture of a very violent propensity for violence. And how could it not be prejudicial? If the court has no other questions, I am finished. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.